So, as Virginia said, I'm a senior programming writer. I'm on the Exchange Interoperability User Education team. My team's been working really closely with the Exchange developers and architects over the past few years to write the Exchange open specifications that we'll be talking about today. So when I was first asked to put together this presentation, an analogy immediately popped into my head, and that is, most of us at one time or another have probably been to a big theme park like Disneyland or Disney World, and you walk in the front gates and you're immediately surrounded by all kinds of activity and attractions. You get the rides and the games and the restaurants and the shops. And your first thought's usually something along the lines of, how cool is this? This is going to be great. But then before you make it even a few steps into the park, you start asking yourself some questions. You start trying to make sense of it all. What's all in the park? What rides are there? What games? What stores? What restaurants? Where should I start? Where do I go to get a bite to eat? Where are the games? Is there any kind of organizational scheme that helps me make sense of it all? How do I find my way around? How do I navigate through everything? So to me, I think personally, being new to the open specifications, I can imagine would be a very similar type of experience in that, on one hand, you know there's a lot of great information to be had here. But on the other hand, initially at least, you probably have a lot of questions about how things are organized, what specifications the documentation set contains, what type of topics we cover, what type of content you might expect to see in each individual type of specification. So my mission today is to help answer some of those questions. And hopefully, when we finish up with this hour, you'll be able to move forward confident, feeling like you have a really good chance maximizing the benefit you can derive from our specifications. So let's get started here. Our session goals, things we want to cover today. First, we'll be identifying the specifications that make up the entire documentation set. Next, we'll be understanding the naming conventions, because understanding how our documents are named can help you kind of make sense of the bigger picture and how things fit together. We'll explore the four types of specifications. So depending on what type of specification you're looking at, the content will differ slightly. So we'll walk through how that works. We'll understand how product behavior differences are noted. And by that I mean how we document when one version of our product or products behaves differently than another. We'll learn about overview and reference documents. These are some core documents that are be important to you no matter which area of the Exchange open specifications you might be interested in. We'll explore some common usage scenarios, specifically how you might go about identifying which specifications are relevant to your scenarios. Lastly, we'll conclude with some talk about logistics. So we want to know where and how to access the specifications, and we also want to know how to identify what's changed at each release. So we have a lot to cover today. Because of that, we won't be getting into the technical details of the content in each individual protocol specification, but future sessions at this event, as well as similar events in the future, will cover more of the technical details. Also, before we get started, I would ask that if you have any questions that pop up along the way, if you could just make note of those questions and save them to the very end, we've actually set aside some time for the end of this hour to address questions. So let's get started. Let's start looking at the entire set of specifications. So this diagram shows the entire set of specifications. And as you can see, hopefully you can read it there at the back of the room, it's broken into several different areas. The first are the primer documents. So the primer documents are documents that are important, that have wide-reaching impact across the entire specification set. So no matter which area of documents you're interested in, these primer documents are going to be important for understanding, to lay a base of knowledge going forward. We'll talk more about those in more detail in a few moments. We have directory and profile services documents, NSPI, Exchange Active Sync, RPC, message processing, content conversion, web services, standards-based protocols, and also web dev. So one thing you'll notice, at first this diagram may look a little cryptic to you. It's because we're using what we call the document short name to refer to the documents. Those of you that have used our specifications for a little while already, you're probably somewhat familiar with some of these naming conventions. Let's take a look at how our documents are named. So each specification has a short name and a long name. I've listed a few examples here. The MSOXC RPC is the wire format protocol specification. OXO flag is the informational flagging document. And OXWS GTRM is the GitRooms list web services protocol specification. So all of our documents, if it's a Microsoft open specification document, it's going to start with MS-dash. Following that, you can kind of get a sense for what the document covers by short name if you understand some of our naming conventions. So if it starts, the first couple letters are OX, that indicates Outlook Exchange. AS indicates Active Sync. OXWS indicates a web services document. STAN is a standards document, and XWD indicates a web dev document. And so as you start to, like I said, get more familiar with the documents and use them more and more, these naming conventions will start standing out to you a little bit more. So now we've had a look at the entire set of documents, and we understand a little bit about how the naming conventions work. Let's look at the type of content that you might find in each individual specification. So we use templates to write these specifications, which means that we're trying to ensure conformance between specifications, so there's a consistency of format. No matter what specification you're looking at, you're kind of seeing basically the same sections and same type of content. We have a few different templates that we use, and so you'll see based on the template or based on the type of content described in it or specified in a document, the top level table of contents will change slightly. For example, this is the basic structure of an RPC document or a SOAP document. And the section 6 I've highlighted here, just to point out that content does differ slightly depending on the type of content, the type of technology that's specified in the document. For example, section 6 for an RPC document will be the full IDL, but for a SOAP document will be the full WSDL. So if it's not an RPC document, it's not a SOAP document, and instead the document specifies a structure, you'll see a table of contents that looks more like this. And I've highlighted section 2 here just to show that section 2 in the structures template will actually be structures as opposed to messages as it is an RPC or SOAP template. And lastly, if it's not RPC and it's not SOAP and it's not a structure, you're going to see the third structure there, which is very similar to RPC SOAP minus the full IDL or full WSDL. Other main difference here is that obviously a structure has no protocol details, so you're not going to see a protocol details section in that document. So we don't have time today. I wish we did. It could take a full day probably and walk through each of these individual sections and talk about the type of content and you might expect to find in each. We definitely don't have time for that. But we are going to hit on a few. And I want to start with section 1, introduction. So the glossary contains terms that are used within the specification. And one thing about the glossary that I want to point out is you'll actually see kind of the terms broken into two lists within the glossary. The first is global terms. So if a term's used across multiple protocol specifications, you'll see it listed in the global terms at the top of the glossary. What that means is it's prefaced with a sentence something to the effect of the following terms are defined in MSOX gloss. That's our master glossary document. And we'll talk more about that in a moment and how that works. But terms that are used just within that specification and not within any other specifications are actually defined there in that document. Following the glossary, we'll see the references. So all informative and normative references that are cited in the specification will be listed in the references section. So what's the difference between a normative reference and an informative reference? A normative reference is one that's absolutely required for understanding or implementing the protocol. So if it's in a normative, if a reference is listed in the normative references section, then it's absolutely required for understanding or implementing the protocol. Informative references, on the other hand, provide more background or historical information. It's kind of a nice to have. So informative references often provide more context around the area or technology that's being specified in the document. Overview is a great place to go if you're just browsing through documents and you want a quick snapshot of what a document does, what it talks about. Skip right to the overview. Next one is the relationship to other protocols. This will describe the dependencies on lower level parallel protocols, and also in turn the types of protocols that depend on the document you're looking at. So this section can be really useful and really important, particularly when you have a specification that you know is related to your scenario, and you're trying to figure out what other specifications you might need to be looking at. This section can be really helpful. So following the introduction section, we have the messages or structures section. As we saw a second ago when we looked at the table of contents for the three different types of documents, if it's an RPC document or a SOAP document, or it's a non-structured document, then it'll be called messages. Otherwise, in a structure template, it's actually called structures. Either way, the purposes of this section, very similar. So the messages will specify how the messages are transported, and it'll also describe the message syntax. Structures similarly specify the structure syntax. Protocol details, clearly a very important section. This is where the details about the protocol behavior are specified. There's several subsections within protocol details. The first, abstract data model. This is a conceptual model of possible data organization that an implementation maintains to participate in a protocol. And we have the timers that are required by the protocol, any steps that are required to initialize the protocol, events that are triggered by a higher layer and corresponding protocol actions, events that are triggered when a message arrives and how the messages are handled, events that are triggered when a timer expires, and lastly, any other events that aren't covered in one of the prior sections. And so clearly this section, in combination with section 2, messages, are kind of the meat of the document. One thing I want to point out about protocol details is that you'll notice as you're looking through the documents that that section is organized by inherent classes of functionality that we call roles. And so very commonly when you look at a protocol specification, you'll see section 3 has multiple subsections. For example, section 1 or section 3.1 may be client details, section 3.2 server details. So throughout section 2, messages, in section 3, protocol details, you notice the use of normative language. And by normative language, what I mean specifically is the use of the keywords may, should not, must, and must not in all capital letters. We're going to spend a few minutes here talking about normative language and our use of normative language within our protocol specifications, because it's critical to have a good understanding of how to interpret that, because normative language and endnotes together specify the implementation differences between different versions of our products. And also, even without the endnotes, you can infer, the use of normative language on its own actually implies certain behavior of our products. So I'm going to talk through the table here, and we'll see what we mean by that. So the term may, in all capital letters, means that the item's optional. It's not required for proper protocol functionality. If there's no endnote associated with a may, that means that no in-scope versions of Office or Exchange implement that behavior. And so by in-scope versions, in a moment we'll talk about the appendix, which is the product behavior section, that lists which versions of our products are covered by each document. So when I say in-scope versions, that's what I mean, versions of our products that are covered by that document, that are in scope of that document. So may with no in-note means that the item's optional, you don't have to do it, and furthermore, none of our products do it. No in-scope versions of our products implement the behavior. If at least one in-scope version of our product does implement the behavior, then you'll see an in-note that specifies that. And we'll take a look at a few examples in a moment. Should always means that the item is strongly recommended, but it's not required. And so if there's no in-note associated with the should, that means that all in-scope versions of Office and Exchange implement that behavior. However, if at least one in-scope version of Office or Exchange does not implement the behavior, then you'll see an end note associated with that should that specifies that exception. Should not always means that the item is strongly not recommended. And with no end note, it means that no in-scope versions of Office or Exchange implement that behavior. If at least one in-scope version goes against that guidance and does implement that behavior, you'll see an end note that specifies that. Finally, must means that the item is absolutely required by the protocol for proper functionality. And must not means that the item is prohibited and invoking it may break the protocol. So key takeaways about normative language are that any statement of optional behavior in our specifications will use the words may, should, or should not. If you don't see one of those word or words, may, should not, then the implication is that it's required. We don't have to specify must, otherwise every sentence in our document would contain must. So if there's no may, should, or should not, then it's required, as if must were used explicitly. Let's take a look at a few examples. So the first, may with an end note. So if pending changes include changes to read-only properties, the server may return an error. So may means the item's optional. You don't have to do it for proper functionality. If there were no end note, it would mean that no in-scope versions of our products return an error. However, that's not true. As the end note specifies, Exchange 2010 does return an error. Let's take a look at should with an end note. The client server should store certain settings as configuration data. Should means that this item is strongly recommended. If there were no end note, it would mean that all in-scope versions of our product do in fact store certain settings as configuration data. However, that's not true. There's an exception. As specified in the end note, Exchange 2003 and Office Outlook 2003 do not read or write configuration data, FAI messages. Lastly, we have a good all-up example of should, must, may with no end note. So this one says, conflict reporting, if deemed necessary by the value of PID tag resolve method property, should be done through a combination of the following methods. Then it lists three kind of bullet point lists there. So should without an end note means that we strongly recommend it. There's no end note, so that means that all in-scope versions of our product follow these three steps for conflict reporting. However, following that, we have a couple more sentences with normative language. First, servers must implement conflict reporting, failing ROPs in creating conflict resolve messages. That's number one and number two. So we're saying that you must follow number one and number two for conflict reporting. However, servers may implement other means of conflict reporting, meaning that you may or may not choose to create a conflict notification message, number three. Because there's no end note, we're saying that we don't implement other means of conflict reporting. We actually follow this as a should implies, but you may choose not to follow number three and instead do something other than create a conflict notification message, and doing so will not impact the protocol in a negative way. So the end notes, such as the ones we just looked at, will appear in the product behavior section, which is located near the end of each specification. Product behavior section starts, as we mentioned a second ago, by listing the products that are in scope of the specification, the products that are covered by the specification. So it's important as you're, you know, if you're probably one of the first things you want to do as you're starting to use specifications is make sure you're really familiar with the product behavior section and exactly which versions of our product are covered by the information within each one. And then following the list of products, you'll see the end notes, as we just looked at, that specify the behavioral differences between our product versions. So now we've had a chance to kind of take a look at the bigger picture of what our documentation set looks like as a whole. We understand how they're named. We understand the type of content you may find in each individual specification. We're going to take a look at some core documents, we call them primer documents. It'll be important to you no matter which area of the specifications you're interested in. The scope for our conversation today in terms of product or primer documents are going to be limited to these seven docs. I do want to point out, and we're limiting it to the seven docs because these docs will be relevant across the entire documentation set. No matter which area you're interested in, they're relevant. I do want to point out, though, that for each individual area they're interested in, for example, if you're interested in RPC or maybe you're interested in ActiveSync, there's a set of core docs that are really kind of primer documents for those individual areas as well. And in the interest of time, we won't be getting into those today, but just keep in mind that these docs apply across the entire documentation set, whereas for each individual area that you're interested in, there may also be other primer documents as well. So let's start with a system overview doc. MSOX Proto is its short name. It describes the overall system and high-level components within it. contains a complete list of all protocol documents, including its short name, long name, and description. It provides an overview of the protocols and functionality used by clients and servers. And very importantly, it provides use cases and corresponding examples that can demonstrate how the specifications can be used to facilitate certain development scenarios. So if you're new to the Exchange Open Specifications, this document is a great place to start. We're going to take a look in a moment when we talk about usage scenarios, about how you can use this document to identify documents that might be relevant to your scenario. So it's not only an important place to start, I think, but as you're using the specifications, this is a document you'll probably continue to come back to throughout the process. Next one we'll talk about is the Master Glossary. We touched on this a moment ago, MSOX Gloss. This one provides listed definitions for terms that are common or that are used by more than one specification. One thing I want to point out about the Master Glossary document is as you're looking through it, you'll notice that some terms have multiple definitions, such as property here, the example I've shown, has three definitions. And this occurs whenever a term is used in multiple documents, therefore it's a common term, it's a shared term, but depending on which document it's used in, it has different meanings. And so in this example, here's a snapshot taken from the glossary within a distinct specification. It says the following terms are defined in MSOX Gloss. It actually has property as one of the terms, and it denotes that it's the first definition in MSOX Gloss that corresponds to the usage of that term within that document. Next one we have the master property list. So MSOX Props lists all properties that are used for communication between clients and servers. It provides basic reference information about each property, provides links to the documents that specify value ranges and semantics for each property. So here's a snapshot of a property in MSOX Props. One important takeaway about MSOX Props is that it's actually just a catalog of properties. And so it's great in that it contains every single property that's used across our entire specification set, but it doesn't actually contain the detailed information that defines the property itself. And for that, what you'll want to look at is the defining reference. So in this example, the defining reference is MSOXOCal. That's the specification that'll actually contain the detailed definition of that property. Notice that it also contains the consuming references here. So it also lists the documents, any documents that use this property. Master references, MSOXref. So this document provides a complete list of all the normative and informative references that are used across our entire documentation set. One point about MSOXref is that it actually divides references into two categories. One is external references. So if a document or reference is not part of our Exchange Open Specifications documentation set, it'll be listed in the external references category. Following that, you'll see internal references, which lists any document reference that is part of our Exchange Open Specifications documentation set. So we have a few different documents that specify data structures and types. The first is MSOXC data. It specifies common data structures that are used by multiple protocol areas. It includes the structure layouts and semantics. Then we have MS-DTYP. This document is actually not part of the Exchange Open Specifications doc set. It actually belongs to the Windows Protocols documentation set, but I've included it here because several of our specifications use this as a normative reference. We rely on this for data type definitions, and so it's very common for you to see this in our specifications. This one has common data types used across the protocol specifications. Lastly, if you're interested in the ActiveSync area, we have MSASD type, and that specifies the format of each data type that's used by the Exchange ActiveSync XSDs. So now that we have a feel for kind of what the core documents are, what the primer documents are, let's take a look at some usage scenarios. Particularly, finding specifications that match your scenario. So you have something you know you want to accomplish, and you know there's this great information in this huge doc set. How do you figure out which documents actually are relevant to your scenario? First, I think there's some key questions you should ask yourself. What scenario do you want to enable? What high-level tasks should be supported? Which system-level components or technologies might be involved? Will the implementation have dependencies on other products, technologies, or standards? Next, browsing MSOXProto, the system overview doc that we touched on a moment ago, for protocols, use cases, and examples that match, can be a great starting point to answer what specifications match your scenario. So let's take a look at some key sections of that overview document and exactly how you might use each. The first is the protocol summary section. So this is a section that lists every single specification that belongs to our entire documentation set. And for each specification, it shows you the short name, the long name, as well as a brief description. So this makes a great starting point just in terms of browsing the document descriptions to understand what topics are covered. And furthermore, the protocol summary section is actually split, as you see, into several subsections, so it groups the documents by related areas. Next, we have use cases. So the use cases are essentially finite, kind of concrete tasks that you might want to perform, such as creating a message, adding an attachment, sending a message, opening a folder. And for each use case, we'll take a look at one in a moment, just as an example. For each use case, it'll walk through what specifications are relevant to that use case. And lastly, we have the example section. So the example section kind of builds on the use cases. It assembles several use cases to accomplish a broader scenario, like displaying the most recent message in the inbox or setting up and displaying new mail notifications. So let's take a look at a use case. So this one's opening a folder. So it kind of walks through a synopsis and tells you what use cases this one builds on or relies upon. And then most importantly, I think, it lists what protocol specifications this use case utilizes. Then it goes into the requirements as well as the protocol specific details. And in the example section, we see the broader scenario, display the most recent message in the inbox. And this one, as we mentioned a second ago, leverages several use cases and combines them to accomplish the broader scenario of displaying the most recent message. And so talks about the entities involved, the preconditions, and then walks through step-by-step the details necessary to implement the example. So MSOXProto, definitely a great resource, like I said, not only if you're brand new to specifications, but also I see it as a document that you'll probably come back to time and time again as you're using the specifications to browse the full list, to leverage the use cases, to leverage the examples. I think that even if you don't see the exact use case or example that matches your scenario specifically, even sometimes having bits and pieces of your scenario across multiple use cases or across multiple examples can be extremely helpful. So today, we're going to conclude a little bit with talk of logistics, specifically how you find a specification, how you view the specifications, how you access them. All of our specifications, all of Microsoft's open specifications, not just the Exchange Server specifications, but also for other products, are published online to MSDN. The quickest, easiest way by far to locate a specific specification is just through search. If you search by short name, the first hit up will be the landing page on MSDN for that document. If you're interested not necessarily in a specific document, but rather you want to come in and just kind of browse around the entire documentation set online, you can do so in the open specifications area on MSDN that I've shown here. Notice that I've highlighted a couple areas that we've talked about today, Exchange Server Protocols, and also Microsoft Standards, where you find the Exchange Outlook Standards specifications. But aside from those, there's also several other products here. So we have Windows Protocols, Microsoft Office, SharePoint, SQL Server, and other standards documents as well, other than Exchange Outlook, within the Microsoft Standards. And so if you're interested ever in accessing not just Exchange, but Windows or Office protocols, this is a great portal into that. And I'll provide the link here in a moment for that. So to view a specification, obviously you can view it online using the table of contents on the left-hand side here. One note I'd like to make about the table of contents is, I don't know how frequently everybody here uses MSDN, but fairly recently, I think, they changed the look and feel of the table of contents. Used to, you'd have the little plus minus. You could toggle, expand, and collapse the table of contents over here. I know for me personally, I kind of like that look, and it's easier for me to navigate that way. If you're like me and you like that look, you can actually use the preferences link in the top right-hand corner to change back to what they call the classic view. So if you prefer that classic look where you can actually see beyond just where you happen to be at the moment, but you can actually expand and collapse and look at other stuff too and kind of get a better context for where you're at, go to preferences and change back to the classic view. So I've highlighted a link here. If you want to have a local copy of a specification, you can do so by clicking the link to download it in PDF format. If you want to download the entire set of specifications, you can use the link just below that, and it'll download a zip file with all the PDFs. One thing I would point out about downloading PDF files is that whether or not you're just downloading two or three or you're downloading the entire set, it's important that you download them all to the same directory if you want the links between the documents to work. So we update our specifications, the Exchange specifications, on a quarterly basis to MSDN. So reasons that we might update include adding new information about new product versions, incorporating testing feedback. Our documents are constantly undergoing rigorous internal testing, so we commonly are updating our documents per that feedback. And additionally, we also commonly incorporate feedback from the forum, so received from customers like yourselves in our forums, make us take a better look, closer look maybe at certain sections of certain documents, and oftentimes we do end up updating our documents for that as well. So if the documents are changing on a quarterly basis, how do you know you're using them over a period of time? How do you know what's changed in the latest release? There's a couple ways to do that. So the first is, in an individual document, you can look at the revision summary table near the beginning of that document, and that'll tell you basically when the last time it was released, as well as all the prior releases. But you'll see the last time it was updated, and the general nature of the updates that took place. Were they editorial changes? Were they major changes? Were they minor changes? And then if you want a detailed list of the changes that occurred in that release, in that update, you go to the change tracking section near the end of the specification. And that actually will list, line item by line item, every single change that's been made to that specification during that release. So I've included here at the end some documentation resources. The first one at the top goes to that open specifications area on MSDN that we saw a second ago in the screenshot, where you can access not only Exchange specifications, but also Windows, Office, SQL Server, etc. And then if you're interested in just going straight into a certain area, I've included those links here for each of our products. Of course, the first being the Exchange protocols, and then the Exchange Server and Outlook standards as well. And then following that, Windows, Microsoft Office, SharePoint, SQL Server. And lastly, we have a great collection of forum resources for you. So if you have questions about how you use the open specifications, or you want to discuss the technical content and implementation of our Exchange Server protocols, these are the places that you want to go visit. The first one's the Open Specifications Forum. It's kind of a top-level forum that contains a link. It contains a set of links, essentially, to all our forum resources. The second one there contains some great information, probably a lot of which we've covered today, about using the open specifications. And then if you have specific questions about our Exchange Server open specifications, you'll want to visit the Exchange Server Protocols Forum, where you can discuss technical content and the implementation of our protocols. And lastly, there's the Documentation on Standards Forum, where you'll find information about our standards documents, which include the Microsoft Exchange Server and Outlook standards documents. So with that, we've kind of concluded the content that I had to present today. I'm going to ask that any documentation team members that are in the room would come on up to the front. And we're going to do just brief introductions, and then we'll field any questions you might have as a group. Okay.
So let's do some quick introductions. If we just start, let's start down there with Steve, and let's just do name and title and kind of what your role is, and we'll move on.
Steve Peterson, work on the documentation for the protocols.
I'm Bob Bunn, programming writer, and I currently work on about 18 of the different protocols.
I'm Laura Graham. I'm a technical editor, and I edit protocol documentation.
Joe Winston, programmer writer. I've done a lot of these documents, and you know, have my four or five that I work on right now.
I'm Tom Randolph. I own one because I'm one of the doc managers, along with Marcy, who chose not to stand up here.
I'm Michael Maynor. I'm addicted to protocol documentation, and now I'm a writer on a lot of the web services documentation.
I'm Katie Kuiper, and I am one of the technical editors on protocols.
My name's Chuck Bigham, and I'm a programming writer, and I work on protocols, web services, and a few of the other ones.
My name is Robert Knight, and I own some web services docs and a few other docs, like MS OxoCal and also OxProto. So I'd be really interested if you all have questions about how you navigate the protocols, or you kind of want to go through any of that stuff. Maybe we can make it a little bit better for you.
I'm Dawn Redfield, and I'm one of the technical editors working on the protocol documentation.
I'm Ann Nelson, and I'm a programmer writer working on the protocol documentation.
And I'm Jason Johnston, a programming writer, work with Kim and the rest of these guys, on a number of documents. Actually can't recall all of them right now. So.
All right, so with that, I'd like to open it up to questions. Does anybody have any questions about what we covered today or anything else about the protocol specification set in general?
I have two questions.
Okay, go ahead. I'm sorry, just Virginia's. I'm going to do this.
So in MSDN, there's a lot of other protocols, and I wonder, like, what you discussed today is shared by the other protocols, like WSPP or MCPP, you know, are the same rules follows, and is this group is part of the same group, or there's two different organizations? And another, that's a small question, there's OXC and OXO, so what are the CNOs? That would be interesting.
That's a good question. Tom, you want to take this one? I get to be the MC, so I get to pick who answers, right?
That's true. So, let's see, as Kevin probably exchanged, the two teams that are here, my team and Marcy's team, are now part of the office developer documentation group, and so there are two writing teams in Exchange. Those two writing teams own the protocols that go anything that surrounds Exchange and anything that surrounds Outlook, which means that the things that go between those two are definitely ours. Office has a third team run by Leslie Alexander McVeigh, who does all of the SharePoint and the other Office, like file formats, and their web services as well. So that's part of the MBD division. There are essentially, these are teams that are owned by the product groups. So Windows has a huge team, right, because they're the ones who had to start this. There's a team in SQL Server, and we all kind of do it a little bit different. For instance, one of the things you don't see up here are several vendors that we hire that work with us. So other teams like SQL, they do it all vendors. Some people do it all, you know, internal employees. And I don't know how to answer your second question. The document formats are actually a long-running and difficultly negotiated settlement between us, our lawyers, the EU, and all the other teams. So yes, we try to use the same. Some of them fall behind. Some teams, based on their product cycle, may be further ahead. But yes, we all are swimming in that same stream of templates and protocols. And
so there are definitely some things that are commonalities. We have templates that will say a document of this kind is going to look like this. So there should be a look and feel that's common across Windows and Office and Exchange. In terms of like the overall view, where you've got Proto is kind of a jumping off point to look at the different docs, and here are a set of examples and use cases, that is not necessarily going to be the same across the different groups. When we started this whole process, we thought, okay, how are we going to serve our customers best? And we did that as well as we could based on the docs that we had, and I think we did a pretty good job. Some of the teams that started before us maybe were flying a little bit more blind or had different mandates. They had different things that they needed to do and wanted to do. And feedback for if you see a team does something in a certain way, one set of documents or a document, you like the way that that works, we're definitely interested in hearing about things like that. Do you have a more specific question about this is a doc that I care about? Or okay.
So regarding the naming conventions, the OXO and OXC, I wish I could tell you the answer to that. I actually looked into that a little bit, you know, when I was putting together this presentation, trying to explain the naming conventions. Does anybody in the room happen to recall?
I can't remember what the C is.
Yeah. OXO. Well, we know OX is Office Exchange, but what did you say?
I thought C was client.
Hmm.
Was it client or core?
Could be. So the answer is I'm not really sure. I know there was a big, you know, a lot of stuff up front logistically that we went through to come up with the naming conventions, and that's one of the things that, quite frankly, I don't know the answer to. Anybody else? No? Okay. Yes, I'll give you the mic.
This is just a quick question globally for the documentation. Now, I remember back, and I maybe should know the answer to this, but I'm not sure right now. I remember back in December 2008 when I think it was the Active Sync Protocol doc was put out there. And it was based on one particular version. And then later on, 12 came out, 12.0, 12.1, 14. Okay, but there was no archiving. So if you didn't go and grab the PDF, okay, you were kind of, you know, you didn't have a reference point. So are you archiving some of the older documents? Is
the question. Tom, you happen to know the answer to that? Ed Thomas?
I can speak to that.
Okay, go ahead.
Virginia knows too.
Virginia, you want to talk? Okay. So the ActiveSync docs you're talking about, the original old docs, those were licensed docs where, you know, you had a license and here was a set of documentation that described this. The documents related to ActiveSync that we put out on the website now are part of the open specification effort. And so we wanted to make those broadly available to everyone. What we support and the way we put the information out is different than the group of individuals previously that had paid for licensing and had specific support agreement. As far as I know, some of those are still in place, but the way that we put the documents out now make them more broadly available. We did use the documents that you're talking about in order to put our documents together. Did you have some... Right.
The reason that you took it from the protocol
is not necessarily that it's not
pass it down to
Charlie.
You have other reasons to take it out, but the information is
useful,
and you don't have reference to
build up
the information.
So you have to grab it, make sure you get it, and store it away locally as you change it, so you have a reference point.
So I'm going to hand this to Tom. He's going to... I do what I'm told. So he's going to briefly sum up your question as he understands it, and then he's going to speak to it.
That's right. So your question is that in some of the especially ActiveSync documents, Marcy, come up here. She's so shy. In some of those documents, it appears that significant changes to the document are made, but that previous versions information is no longer there. And therefore, in order to have a full history throughout time, you actually have to somehow magically figure out when a documentation is updated and quickly go and get it and store it somewhere before it gets updated again. Marcy will answer that question.
Hi. So I'm Tom's compatriot. I manage some of the documents, but I was taking notes, so that's why I didn't come up earlier. So I understand the question. And the response is that we actually have a really rigorous archival system for all of the versions across Microsoft of all the open specifications. I think that if you somehow lose track and you want access to an earlier version of it, a really good place to start is to actually post a request to the forum and ask for that particular version, and then the escalation engineers can follow up with us and we can get that for you. There's also an email address in all the specifications at the start of section 1.2 that is a contact point for requesting copies, archive copies of what constitutes a normative reference, which includes an open specification. So Tom is clarifying that the preferred method is to use the email address that's listed in the specs. Okay. Does that help?
Yeah, thank you.
Okay. I think, too, it does help. Kim underscored this a little bit earlier in logistics, is we do have a really well-defined rhythm for releasing updates, which is every 3 months. So, for example, we're going to release in November, and then we will release again. We're actually going to start synchronizing our release dates with Office to be consistent, and that includes and also SharePoint. So our next release after that will be in March, and then after that it will be in June. I can do math. So every 3 months you can expect to see new information. Does that help?
Hi, everyone. So on your handout sheet, and I know some of you didn't get them, but the email alias is listed on there. It's DocHelp@Microsoft.com. All right, Robert.
So I understand your pain with like the ActiveSync docs, and it seems like there was some information that was different from before and after, but there was a different set of mandates and deliverables from the license docs and for the open standard for ActiveSync. We wanted these things to be accessible to everybody, not just the people that had originally licensed those docs. And so that's why they look a little bit different, because the protocol and the protocols, the ActiveSync protocols, part of the open specification, are available to everyone, not just the people that were part of the original license docs. And we hope that we did a job that, looking at the protocols as they are now, the protocol docs, that you should be able to implement everything related to ActiveSync there. Okay.
Questions? Is anybody on this team responsible for MAPI documentation? So when you're talking about the specifications, the open protocol ones? Yes, or MAPI SDK, are we talking about? Okay, right. So the question is, are any of us responsible for the MAPI documentation? Correct. Okay. So there's the MAPI APIs or the SDK. None of us are actually. Tom, are you guys actually owning that? Okay. So Tom's team actually owns part of the Exchange SDK or all of the Exchange SDK and part of the Office SDK.
Indeed. If it comes under Exchange developer documentation, my team owns it. So all the SDKs for 2000, 2010. MAPI is a special case because there's a MAPI that is shipped both in Exchange and a MAPI API that is shipped in Office. The Office team has taken over the MAPI documentation for client-side application. So which one of those five? Okay, so server-side MAPI no longer exists in 2010. Yeah, that API no longer exists. We have a different API internally. The RPC endpoint, however, does exist. However, the DLL that's actually consumed by clients which are trying to get to it is the client API that either ships with Outlook or, yeah. Go ahead. Yeah, for protocols, remember, so MAPI, the messaging API, is an API layer that a client or a provider can register with the operating system to say that they handle messaging API calls, right? Those API calls are programmed in a way similar to your normal application, right? It's an old C style API, it's a DLL, you bring up the interface, you call the thing, right? It's not a protocol. Buried underneath that API is a set of information that's carried via RPC across the wire in a protocol form, and that's JSON and the RPC protocols.
Okay, so yeah, we all own specific pieces of it, but if you have specific questions, feel free. I'll see what I can do.
I want to throw you into the bus, but this is Mr. Mappy right here, is what his, what his nickname is, so... Any other questions?
One thing is you guys don't document protocols between different server roles, particularly in the Exchange server, like client access server and mailbox server. And is that you're not going to document it, or you're using some kind of special protocols, or what's going on?
Okay, I think Tom, Debbie here back will address this question.
Yeah, so as actually part of the interop principles, part of the what is the foundation of what we documented was actually between the client, you know, a high volume selling client and the server. And right now the context of servers is actually not part of our undertaking. So I know there's been requests for some customers to actually have that, but right now that's actually not something that we're actually doing right now. Yeah, we treat it as a communication protocol between Outlook and Exchange Server. That's currently what we've documented. Okay.
One of the examples you showed earlier showed the normative references. I don't know if you can bring the slide back up. But the date on the normative references is usually the date from the earliest release. That is, for a lot of the documentation, it's the April 2008 release. And if that's the normative reference for absolutely required to implement, why isn't it the current date?
Working. What if our editors want to take that? I know you guys are kind of involved in that process, or Tom. Or...
From what I know, and Dawn may know a little bit more about this, but initially we put the original publish date, and now we've been revisiting that, and so we're actually going to take the date off. Dawn, do you want to say more? Because I think there have been some conversations about updating the references.
Yes, we've always just the date has always been the date of initial availability on the Microsoft specifications, but when you go to that specification, you're always going to have the most updated, you know, when you click on the link, it's always going to take you to the most recent version of the documentation. Otherwise we're looking at updating every single reference, every single release, and we haven't implemented a way to do that. So we're going to be removing the dates because there is that confusion. But you're always online, you're always going to be getting the most recent.
I work off the PDF documents, and I have all of them. Like, from April 2009.
So my understanding is that our process is to always list the initial publication date. That's just something that was decided, and as Laura said, I think that's...
But when you click the link in the PDF, it's always going to take you to the most recent.
But not if you download all the PDFs.
Not if you have it on paper.
But if you put in that the URL. It's still going to take you to the most recent version, even though it has the initial release date on it.
I was just talking with my quiet editor over here. I believe the reason that it includes the original publication date is because the updates to specifications don't constitute a new edition of that protocol. That is, they are updates to that, and so it's actually a Chicago Manual of Style issue with regard to how you form references in bibliographic references. It's not that we are saying, oh, you know, the version from 3 years ago is actually the version that's compatible with the brand new version of Exchange. It's that the protocol itself is named for that original, you know, like your college chemistry text, third edition, right? Well, they may have had small updates, but it's the third overall edition of that textbook that is what they claim. And I think that's really what's going on here. Like they said, we plan to remove them to get rid of the ambiguity around which version we're really talking about.
So we would encourage you to, if you work off the PDFs, download the latest set. And that's probably the best set to work off of.
Anybody else?
So I also agree that you did a very good job with documenting the protocols, and thank you for that. One thing that we've been seeming to miss and been asking a lot of questions about that is it's a protocol stack, right? You have the RPC, then you have the MSMDB, in which we refer to as the what sometimes people call MAPI, but it's the MSMDB and the ROPS and all of that. We've been missing kind of understand like how the traffic behaves with connections, like when Outlook opens a new connection, which is a behavior in DCRPC, how does the dynamics of the protocol behave? So the way that the communication goes right now is very kind of dry. You don't understand. You understand the messages, but it's hard to understand, you know, how it will behave with connection and dynamically, and we are from Cisco are really missing that understanding to have our product work better. So I was wondering if there are any plans or what are your thinkings on that?
Volunteers?
So obviously one of the challenges in an effort like this is to scope appropriately what we're documenting. And when you look in the sections that Kim went over for the different docs, you can see that there are, I'm trying to remember, do you remember what section where it talks what the dependencies are, and can you pull that up where it shows?
1.4.1.3.
Yeah. Right. And I mean, for this effort, we can't document all of our dependencies, all the other protocols that we're dependent upon.
So again, the question for anybody who didn't hear it is, you know, why don't we do a better job of specifying behaviors related, not just the messages that go over the wire? And I think, I mean, having been involved in this initiative since the beginning, I know, you know, one of our primary points of emphasis is to describe, specify, you know, the protocol, how what data goes over the wire, and how to implement that. I know a lot of the behavior differences sometimes, and the behavior, the type of behavior that you're talking about, comes down to what we consider kind of implementation details. And I think, you know, there's an emphasis on our side of trying not to get too far into that. We're trying to stay at the protocol level of, you know, what goes over the wire. And it's kind of a gray area sometimes in terms of, you know, where do implementation differences start and what's absolutely necessary to understand in order to use the protocol. And I think it's a gray area.
Sorry.
So the protocol is like, it's a message store protocol, right? It's about objects and data stores and everything. And these have lifespans on the protocol. So sometimes you have an open and close and it's clear. But sometimes things start or stop to exist from dynamic behaviors. And this is not described, right? So when a certain amount of connections open up or a certain amount of connection closes, there are some protocol behaviors that comes from that. And this need to be specified. So it's not about implementation. It's about the impacts on the protocol from the dynamic behaviors.
So when you encounter a situation like this, this is actually a good example of a question that should be directed towards our support personnel. And there it will be able to take a look at this and see if there is content that is missing. They will be able to open an issue on that and move that forward. Tom?
So are you looking more for something like with what Windows has done, like the system overview docs? Sure. Sorry, just a sec here. I keep forgetting I own the mic.
So, you know, like Outlook opens a connection, it do a binds with association group ID, then this association group ID is associated with a certain mail store objects that are used for the connect, and there are relationship between those two. And like if you have in your profile, let's say, an encrypted mail pool, you have a profile that you have two message stores. One is a profile for signing or encryption. Another one is profile to have clear text. So they're going to be different behaviors and application from the protocol to that. And these are things that are important to understand. And we're following with support. So for so many cases, we don't get the answers. And it's not really, I don't think your answer is true, because it's really a bigger effort, like what he says. You need to size what you're documenting for, and you need to take that task. It's a big task, and see if it's missing there. And we've been asking so many questions around that, and for us, it's really missing, and we see it as part of the protocol. And the answer that it's implementation, we don't really agree to that.
Yeah, so part of my, because I've been involved in those discussions, most is that, you know, our common theme that we've been talking about was that we're based on RPC, and you know, if you were to ask one of the developers, one of the core developers, say on the store, about what goes on, he doesn't know. So that's why I said, as partitioning wise, we're just sitting on top of Windows, and so it's kind of this weird kind of. That's why I was asking about the system overview doc, because Windows actually has put some effort into that, and maybe that's something that we should look at as a potential reference and possibly extend.
And that's where I see the problem start when it goes cross border groups.
Yeah,
that's where the difficulty starts on your end. It's like
that. Well, it's something we'll consider. I mean, I'm not going to say yes or no because I'm not responsible for that. But anyways,
security is also related to Windows, NTLM and Kerberos, and how they work with Outlook and Exchange. So that's another area where we need cross protocol behavior descriptions. And my another comment is, how do I go about searching for a particular call across multiple documents instead of opening each one and looking for it?
Searching for a particular...
Like, for example, ECDO connect call, right? It's referenced in many documents. It would really help if you have like a global index where I can just go to the index and kind of browse through the different documents.
Sure. I think... We don't have a global index like that that references individual properties or calls that are used across multiple specifications. But I think if it were me, I think an easy solution to something like that is to download the set of PDFs. We looked at a way where you can download the entire set of PDFs in a zip file and then extract them to a single directory and then just do a Windows search, you know, just search in a Windows Explorer. That would be my best bet, unless anybody else has any ideas.
Well, it goes beyond just the search for, and in this case, one function call. It's a standard call, but the terms that are used, for example, the glossary that you use, the terms, and those terms are to be referred exactly the same in other documents as well. So, you know, you got to have a global template internally to make sure these terms are agreeing to the same semantics or context across the different documents. And if you can publish that, that would be really useful for us.
So the first question, what you can do to find them across the doc set, and this spans Office, Windows, Exchange, SQL Server, SharePoint. If you go to Bing, go to Google, go to Yahoo, whatever, if you actually filter, do an advanced search and filter it to the MSDN domain, you can actually then search for the term and you won't get a lot of extraneous hits. So you can actually just do a little, it's an extra step, but you'll get down just to the docs. That's one. For the other one, we do actually have the glossary. So when we use terms, there is a standard glossary that's shared across Microsoft, which is an MS Gloss. So that's a good one to use as well.
Yeah, so my question goes beyond just the syntactic search. You also have to make sure semantically the term is used correctly in each one of those documents. For example, Eitan's question about RPC connections, right? So Windows may describe how the RPC behaves. How do you tie that to Outlook opening connections or Exchange processing connections? The association group ID. These are like terms that protocol developers look for, and they have to be referred in a context-sensitive manner and still related together across the documents.
Yes.
It's more than just syntactic search.
Right. I was just trying to give you the one to narrow it down.
So just one more tip.
Should be consistent across our group.
We can't hear you. I'm going to jump in because I've got the mic. So just a quick answer to another tip is when you have downloaded all the PDFs, PDF has a text string search function that's very handy for searching across the doc sets. But we do hear your additional request on the semantics.
So I don't remember what you said, but I think it was an error code that you're talking about? What was it? Right, which one? So within our doc set, any ROP, any term, any field should be consistent. It may not be between our group and Windows. And I think, you know, mapping a particular field or value or term across those, I mean, I feel your pain. And maybe that's something that we should talk about. I'm not entirely sure how we would go about doing that. I think it's a really good question, and it's maybe something that we should probably capture and discuss.
Anybody else? Going once, going twice. Okay, well, take one final look at the faces up here. I think a lot of us are going to be around for the next couple throughout the day today and tomorrow, so if you have any additional questions that come to mind, feel free to pull us aside, and we may not know the answer, but maybe we can find somebody who does. So